All right, my name is Nick Simons. I'm a program manager on the Office Web Apps team. And I've been invited here today to talk about something near and dear to my heart, WAPI. Before I actually get started, I have an overview slide that I forgot to put any words on, but I'm just going to give you a quick overview that is the words. Essentially, I want to just give you a quick overview of what WAPI is from our perspective. So the Office Web Apps have been around since we released Office 2010. Our first big sort of service-to-service relationship was with SkyDrive. And for that interaction, we built a protocol called WSHI, which is not a public API. It's based on WCF. And that worked out extremely well for us. When we integrated with SharePoint, we actually did it in a more conventional way. We built a SharePoint application, and we installed that on SharePoint. That's how we worked with SharePoint 2010. We quickly realized that wasn't scalable. We wanted people to be able to do things like run the same instance of the Office Web Apps against multiple SharePoint farms. We wanted Exchange to be able to consume the Office Web Apps, which they do now. Link also, as well as additional third parties. And of course, as everything in Microsoft, and especially in Office, is moving into the cloud, we wanted a model where we could stand up a single large-scale service that could serve both SkyDrive, SkyDrive Pro, SharePoint, Exchange Online, Facebook, Mail.ru, SESNAM, NetEase, many, many partners around the world. And we have one broad service that we use to do that. We have a number of different protocols, that we use. But what makes WAPI special is WAPI is the one that we use to integrate with SharePoint, Exchange, Link, and a lot of our new third parties. And it's just very, very simple. It's a documented API based on the principles of REST. Okay, so that's my overview that would have been at least some words up there if I hadn't forgotten to paste them. I want to talk a little bit about how WAPI actually works. So essentially, in a WAPI interaction, there are sort of three pieces. There's the browser, which could be some other client. It doesn't have to be a browser. It could be a desktop client. There's a host, and there's an app. And in the case that we'll talk about today, the host is SharePoint. So that is a WAPI server. It implements the server side of the WAPI protocol. And Office Web Apps is a WAPI client. We've implemented the client side of the WAPI protocol. And the way an interaction actually works is the user will normally be on a page that is being provided by the host, and they will navigate to a document that they want to view or edit. And the host will actually create another iframe, and they will navigate that inner iframe to a URL that is on the WAPI client. Some very specific pieces of information get passed on that URL. One of the pieces of information is the WAPI source, which I'll talk about in a second. And the other is the access token, which I'm pretty sure you guys are going to be very familiar with, because it is essentially, it is not actually an OAuth token, although in the SharePoint implementation, it is. It doesn't have to be an OAuth token, though. It's entirely up to the WAPI server what kind of token it wants to provide, because all we do is pass it right back when we call to the WAPI source. But that is how we handle our authentication and an authorization story, which is on an access token that is on that initial request, and in fact on every subsequent request. So it's really, really important when you are doing any of this stuff that you do it over HTTPS. I'm sure, again, you've heard that probably for the last few days, is anytime we're doing anything to do with putting credentials over the wire, we need to make sure the traffic is encrypted. So the way this basically works is, once the WAPI client gets the WAPI source and the access token, it makes an initial request to the WAPI source. So that WAPI source is a URL, and the URL points right back to the host, at which point the WAPI interaction begins, and that's how we get information about the file, that's how we get the file, that's how we make changes to the file. All of it happens server to server based on things that the customer is doing in the app frame here. Are there any questions about this before I move on? While I get a sip of a drink. Yep. So this, the only thing that matters about this flow, like this is arbitrary client, so this could be Trident controls, this could be something that you've just decided to do yourself. One thing to note is these requests are all HTTPS, or HTTP if you're crazy. And that fundamentally, if you were, say, integrating with the Office web apps, what they know how to do is render themselves in a web page and show you Office documents. If the WAPI client was some entirely different app, it could potentially do something else, because the protocol doesn't care. But that's probably not that interesting. Any other questions? So I just want to walk through the flow of a file view really, really quickly. So this is a diagram that's pulled directly from the documentation that's available on the internet right now that you can just go look at, MS-WAPI. And basically, it's the same exact flow we just saw, only now it's broken down in sort of in a step-by-step flow, where the browser sends a request to the WAPI server, so that's SharePoint, saying, I want to see a file, at which point the server sends information back to the browser, which is essentially the URL that it's going to now navigate back to the WAPI client. The WAPI client says to the server, okay, I want some information about the file, gets that information, it says, all right, thanks for the information, could you give me the file, gets the file, at which point the client is able in the browser to provide a rich experience for the user with that file. That's all there is to viewing. That's it. And we'll actually cover this flow again later with the actual URLs. But are there any questions here before I move on? I am going to run out of slides if people don't ask me questions. Yes. So in the context of this, when I say, ah, thank you, you made a sign. So the question was, in this diagram, does WAPI client represent the code that's running in the browser, or is it strictly the server? And I would say, in the context of this diagram, we're really just talking about server. So when I say WAPI client, I mean something very specific in that I mean an implementation of the client side of the WAPI protocol. Now, how it interacts with the browser, which you could also call a client, is a little bit arbitrary. There is HTML running in the browser, and that HTML is all emitted by the WAPI client. None of that has anything to do with the fact that it's a WAPI client. It has to do with the fact that it's a web application. That make sense? All right, so I want to talk about another very important concept. So if I go back here, and one of the things that the WAPI server is able to do is the WAPI server is able to tell the browser, here's how you go and talk to the WAPI client. Now, in order for that to be possible, the WAPI server has to have knowledge before this flow begins of what the WAPI client can do, where it is, how to address it. And the way we do that is there's an initial handshake, which we call discovery, and it looks like this. Basically, the host contacts a known endpoint, so this is a standard pattern where you hit a URL that you know about, and you hit this endpoint. I should just bring my drink over here. Hit that endpoint, and we pass back XML. That's it. And then the host, because this XML is in obviously it's in a standard form, the host needs to know how to actually take that XML and record it. And specifically, I talk about bindings here. And the reason I talk about bindings is because the right way to think about the content of this XML is in terms of really file extensions and what you can do with them. So essentially, in our discovery, we have this concept of an action. And I'm going to talk a little bit about more about it in a second. But fundamentally, we have this concept of an action, and there are quite a few of them, and I'm not going to go through all of them here. They're all documented. But for each one of those actions, you can associate it with a file extension, and then also there's a specific URL that is used by the WAPI server to essentially get that action for that file type. So does that make sense? So if I'm a WAPI server and I want to view a Word file, I'm going to use this URL source, because that's the Word file extension. I'll use this URL source when I'm constructing that initial URL that I create for my iframe. That make sense? Maybe it'll make even more sense in a second. Or it could just get confusing. So let's go through. I am going to move my drink over here. This is ridiculous. Sorry. I don't like being stuck in a corner. Okay. So let's walk through this a little bit. And I will get, since you're not asking questions, I'll try to get into some detail. Actually, you're doing fine. So basically, the XML starts with the first block in the XML is the net zone. And we have concepts of zones. And if you've used SharePoint, you probably understand that there's also in SharePoint a concept of zones. There is a loose affinity between our zones and SharePoint zones. It's very loose. I will say that these exist because we needed to have some way of fitting into that scheme, but they're not precisely the same. So essentially, what we allow a WAPI client to do is define four sets of URLs. So we have this concept of external URLs and internal URLs. So when an admin, say, in an organization configures the Office Web App server, they have the option of saying, all right, if someone's hitting this server from an internal site, we want them to hit this URL, which is some internal domain. But if they're hitting it from out on the extranet or the internet, we want them to use this different URL. And we allow them to actually specify both of those things, and then we generate different XML and two blocks of XML. So really, that's the concept of external and internal. Which is basically just you now have the option of having two different URLs, as opposed to in SharePoint, where I believe now you can just have an infinite number of different URLs. So the other part is HTTPS or HTTP. So I just got finished telling you don't use HTTP. Here's my reason for why sometimes it's okay. Setting up certs and doing all that stuff can be troublesome, and if all you want to do is set up a proof of concept with some documents that are just garbage documents that you're just using for the purposes of testing, then I would say it is completely legitimate to go and stand up, say, an Office Web App server that you then can point SharePoint or some other solution at and use HTTP, at which point then you would want to have an HTTP section in your discovery file and consume it. But otherwise, don't do that. The only other time is if you're only ever internal and you have IPsec enabled, and not just encrypting parts of the traffic, but all of it. And I don't think anybody does that. All right, so the next one to look at is the app name. So this is a concept in discovery that you could choose to completely ignore as a consumer of the XML. That's a choice. What this essentially allows you to do is a couple of things. One thing is it provides a logical grouping of the actions that are going to come later in the discovery. That's particularly useful, say, if you have lots of actions, and our file is very, very big because there's lots of different file extensions and lots of different things you can do with those files. So essentially, this provides that logical grouping. And then let's say, for example, you didn't want Excel, but you do want Word. Instead of having to like think about like all the different file extensions you care when you're sifting through them, you could just use this higher level concept. But it is not super, it's not actually used all that much. The thing that really matters is the next piece, which is the action. A couple other things I will point out is we have a favicon URL, which is a thing that the host can use to display the correct URL when it renders our page for the favicon. So instead, so if it's SharePoint, instead of showing your SharePoint icon, it could show the Word icon. They can do that because we provide a link to a favicon URL in the XML. This is something which you can consume or not. It's very optional. Check license is another optional thing. We have license enforcement in SharePoint, and this tells SharePoint whether or not it should try to apply that license enforcement to this set of things. So for example, a third party could come along and set that to false, so that SharePoint didn't try to apply licenses, the WAC server licenses, the Office Web Apps server licenses. I mean, you shouldn't use code words in talk. But this basically tells SharePoint not to worry about the URLs in that section. All of this is documented. All right, this is the meat and potatoes of Discover. It's the action. So name is the actual thing. There's a list of these, but you can imagine what they are. View, edit, mobile view, thumbnail preview. I don't think I got that one right, but you get the idea. Bunch of things that Office Web App Server can do, bunch of things that are different. So yes, a question. Well, can what generate PDFs? So there is currently no action for conversion services in the protocol today. There is actually functionality to do, you can render PDFs using the Office Web Apps today. And there are conversion services built into SharePoint that can do some of the things that you're describing. I think they can do the one you just talked about. I think Excel does to PDF. I'm not an expert. But I do not believe we expose any actual conversion actions in our discovery. Do we, Tyler? No. It is a thing we actually talked about doing, but we haven't done it. If you want us to do it, you just need to sort of, you can say so, and it's one more piece of feedback that we pay attention to. The next thing is file extension. Pretty self-explanatory. So you can imagine, obviously, there'll be lots of them. That's not something that you can go comma, delimited list or anything. There's one action per file extension. Default, in this case it says true. This is referring to the action for that file extension. So this is more of a hint for the WAPI for the WAPI server. So the WAPI client gets to say to the WAPI server, we think this should be the default action when somebody clicks on this file type. That's what that's really saying. The WAPI server can choose to completely ignore that suggestion, but this is an opportunity for the person who's implemented their application to say, this is the thing I think that should be the default action. And the last thing is the URL source. Now, there's a couple of things that are interesting about the URL source. One thing I want to point out, this is mostly just a link. Obviously, the dot, dot, dot is not actually, that's me not having room on the slide for a real URL. This down here is the peculiar placeholder schema that we use for telling you the types of information that we need the WAPI server to add to the discovery in order to form the URL. And I'm going to talk about more on the next slide, but since I don't have a picture, I don't think, of those on the next slide, try to capture those in your memory and hold on to them. And then there's disclosing the tags. Before I move on, are there any questions about this? Yes. That is an excellent question. And I will tell you that the answer is entirely up to the implementer. So, in fact, even here at Microsoft, the SharePoint team, we only runs discovery once when you actually run. There's a PowerShell command you run, and it does the handshake, gets all the files, and calls it a day. Link, on the other hand, runs discovery every 30 minutes. And they both work just fine. So that's definitely an implementer's choice. There is actually some additional information in the discovery XML as well that I haven't included here, which is an encryption proof key that we use for establishing a trust relationship between the server and client. That's going to change fairly like from time to time, and so it is necessary to go and run discovery just to get that piece more frequently. That's in the documentation, but we're not going to cover that today, except that I just did. All right, so I want to talk a little bit about what you saw with the angle brackets. So a couple of things that you need to know about actions. This is not typical XML. Obviously, the actual schema is completely normal XML. However, because of those special angle bracket placeholders, you need to have logic in your code that can actually deal with that. You can't just use your garden variety XML parser. It is a choice that we made. It's worked out fairly well, mostly. Although I do believe we had some issues with it with link, if I'm not mistaken. But ultimately, it all worked out. Very few tears were shed. Something else you need to know is that if you don't recognize an action as a WAAP implementer, like as a server implementer, it's very important not to try to do it anyway, because you don't know what the required capabilities are. And the last thing I actually want to mention is how the URL source actually works. So I actually have the ability to go back. So in this case, what we're looking at is we're looking at two parameters that we want, and I think because it's angle brackets, these are required parameters. That's right? These are optional, so square is required. I can't remember now. Sorry. Anyway, it's all documented. But essentially, these are parameters that you may provide. And what this essentially says is, this is a UI_LLCC is a documented thing that is written down in the WAPI protocol documentation. So you need to know how to generate a thing that will correspond to something that we understand and know what to do with, and you need to append it to UI equals as a URL parameter on the URL. Same with this. You have an RS, and you have to understand how to make DC_LLCC. Those are both language codes. One is for the UI language, and one is for the culture. But all of those are all documented. But if you don't recognize one of those, again, you can't actually form the URL if it's required. And I believe there's a distinction, which is all covered in the documentation. Yes? What's not there? So I'm going to look at your screen really quickly. So it's all there. It's just buried. So download the PDF, and then it will be a lot easier to use. So the way that MSDN, the way MSDN presents, so the compliance documentation is a bit arcane. You have this very formal template you must follow in order to be compliant with the legal requirements. You're not allowed to write a just friendly book about your thing. We do actually have a really good blog post that Tyler wrote that we couldn't even show you it. But is everyone going to have access to the presentation? So there's links to both that documentation as well as the PowerPoint presentation, so the blog post that that Tyler wrote that is much more friendly and tells you exactly how to build a viewing host. But the problem with MSDN is it carves up the documentation in these very, very tiny chunks, and you have to know to click and navigate and know how to expand just the right piece to find the actual information you want. If you download the PDF, you just get a document. It is a very long document. It is still not easy to use, but the information is all there. And if anything isn't there, I would appreciate you telling me, because I'm responsible for making sure it gets updated. Anything else before I move on? Oh, absolutely. What do you mean? You don't have to have an O365 subscription. So, no. Let's be super clear. That is why we made this. I'll go one step farther. Viewing function. You can have the Office web app server. You should just put that sign up. I'm going to repeat the question. Hi. The question is, can you use this to do things other than just communicate between SharePoint and the Office web app server, or between Link or Exchange and the Office? And the answer is absolutely. We've used this already to integrate with you know, mail. Well, I'm not going to try to name the ones that use WAPI, because some of them use sort of pre-pseudo WAPIs. We have an integration with Facebook, which uses a protocol called Fishy, which is a lot like WAPI, but not quite as well well-formed. But essentially, that's exactly what we expect you to do. In fact, that's why I would be here talking to you about the protocol, because the protocol is not really terribly interesting if all you do. I have a whole other presentation I can do that tells you how to set up SharePoint and Office web app server, and you don't need to know any of this. It's just two PowerShell commandlets. But if you want to actually build your own WAPI server, then yes, I highly encourage you to do it. The thing I was going to say is, Office web app server is available on the download center, and it's free. You do not have to pay for it. You can stand it up in your organization, and the license agreement says that you can use viewing at no cost. There are rules, like if you're going to try to sell that functionality, then no. But if you want to set it up in your organization or as a part of your website even, that's fine. You can do that. Editing is not free. Yes. No. Completely decoupled. Office Web App Server is a standalone server product, which you just need a Windows 2K8 R2 SP1 with a bunch of KBs, and it'll work great. Or Windows. What's the name of the new server product? 2012 server. Yes. It's the same calculation engine. Yes. That's exactly what you can do. Hi.
So you mentioned that
not free. The question is, what's the license? You need to make it flash. or let me hand the mic around. So the question is, editing, it's not free, so okay, how do you pay for it? And then there was a suggestion that it might be attached to SharePoint seats, which I'm now going to say no, it's not attached to SharePoint seats, it's attached to Office seats. And so basically, Office Web App Server 2013 is what we called it. I don't remember. Office Web. No, I think didn't we? It is versioned, even if it isn't. has a license that very clearly says if you have a volume license for some specific SKU of Office, then you are entitled to use editing in your org. And there's some cool language that I managed to get in there, which says if you have those licenses and you stand it up for editing and then you point it at partners, like let partners have access to your internal like extranet, that as long as you do not meet our criteria for being a web host or being a .com site, the partners don't need to have desktop licenses and they can still use editing. So there is very carefully worded legalese in the license agreement that allows those scenarios. I'm going to say though right now that nothing I say here can be taken as a promise. The right thing to do is read the license, hire a lawyer. And also we are looking at changing the licenses. So that this is for this version. We're always looking for ways to make things simpler for us. Okay. Yes. I will repeat the question. It doesn't help if you say because you're not mic'd. Your mic is over there.
So the question was, how does the WAPI client actually get the URL to the WAPI server? And in addition to the two example template values that Nick showed, there are two well-known parameters that are included in every WAPI request, and that is the WAPI source value, which tells the WAPI client where the document is, and the access token. The access token is optional because you can also choose to pass the access token in an HTTP post once the host page is loaded. So you don't have to pass that on the URL if you don't want to. SharePoint doesn't, for example.
Well, we pass it in the request.
True.
It's in the initial request. It's still being passed in that first request. It functionally is this. It's just not on the URL. It's in the body of the post.
So because those two parameters are required on every request and they're well known, they're not specifically put into each template in the action XML.
So this is how we know. This WAPI source is actually a direct link to the file. And in fact, I'm going to show you that right now. All right. So these are the resource URIs that our protocol uses. As you can see, there's only four of them. I suppose there could just have been one. But the one that you care about is this first one, because that is that's going to be like that WAPI source. And it's the thing that you first hit to get information about the file, which could include a pointer to a different location for the file. That's actually something our protocol allows. So you can actually turn right around and say, that URL I told you about, don't use that. Use this instead. That's actually one of the options in the first request. But it also could just be this, and we're going to assume it is this for the remainder of the talk. But that's what that is. And then this is essentially the same thing, only it's for folders. Folders is really interesting only in the context of OneNote, because that's how OneNote works. So OneNote is in fact a collection of folders and files in folders. It is not a file format in the traditional sense. Then there is this URL, which is essentially a pointer to the actual contents of the document itself, and we'll talk a little bit more about that one later. And then there's another folder one that you need for OneNote. So basically, there's really only two that matter for most of our scenarios, which is that one and that one. No OData here, no. All right, so let's talk about the view flow again, only now from the perspective of the things that we've learned. So essentially, you have the WAPI host, which I've been saying interchangeably, WAPI host and WAPI server. That's because we're a little schizophrenic. But I want to say WAPI host right now, because that's what I put on the slide. The WAPI host generates a client URL based on the discovery XML, so that handshake that we did earlier gave the host all the information it needed and it generates a client URL, at which point the host navigates, I'll say a web page, but obviously there is some flexibility here, to that client URL. At which point the WAPI client, that is to say the owner of that page which just got navigated to, initiates a GET to the WAPI source URL, and this is the WAPI source URL essentially. It's going to look something like that. The pieces that are most important is it has to be WAPI and then something, and then it has to be files, and then there's going to be some ID, some signifier. At which point, it'll get a response. We'll talk a little bit about that response in a second. It's actually probably the most complicated piece of the protocol, except for the even more complicated piece that I hope we don't have to talk about much, because I don't understand it. I'll get there in a second. You'll understand why I don't understand it. And WAPI client initiates, and then the WAPI client initiates a GET to the location of the file. That's the contents URI, and actually gets the binary, at which point it does what it does, which is renders the file. That makes sense? Questions? I'll repeat the question if you ask it. I can practice repeating questions. Wow, we just did such a good job of explaining this. Yes?
So the result that the WAPI client produces effectively an actual
object. So the question is, what actually does the render look like? Is it a HTML? Is it something else? And the answer is, yeah, it's really entirely up to the WAPI client to decide what makes sense. I will give you some examples. Excel essentially does a full HTML JavaScript render of the workbook, with the Excel calculation engine running back on the server to feed information to it, but there's no attempt to actually perfectly emulate the look and feel of the workbook. For the Word viewer, on the other hand, we generate images of each page of the document so that it is precisely the same as what you would see in Word, and that's all we show. It's a big ping or a JPEG, depending on whether it's mostly text or mostly a picture. We do optimizations there, and then there's a bunch of backing XML that allows you to do things like search and select text and comment and things like that. But fundamentally, it's a picture.
So to be clear, in this particular case, you already have the XLSX because you gave it to us to render. So why would you need to get it back from us? Ah, so we'll talk a little bit about that because that's basically an edit scenario.
We're not there yet. Any more questions? All right. So let's talk a little bit more about the WAPI source URL, which we sometimes will call the check file info request. In fact, not sometimes. In our team, that's all we call it. But the dev got angry that I had that at the top of the slide, so I changed it. Dev's not here. I should have changed it back. So this basically returns a bunch of information about the file. It actually returns more than that, though, because it also returns a bunch of information about permissions, and it also returns a bunch of information that helps the client understand really how to render itself. So there's a lot of information in the response to this request that tells the client about what the server is capable of and points the client at an assortment of different URLs that the server thinks is interesting in that scenario. I'm gonna later on actually get into some examples. But what this is essentially, if you're implementing a WAPI server, this is the bare minimum you need to be able to provide in order to meet the requirements of providing a response to that request. And Tyler's gonna walk you through what these all are.
Yeah, so the base file name is pretty straightforward. It's just the file name. The owner ID is, again, host determined, so it's just a unique identifier of the owner of the document. The size of the document and the SHA-hash are really important. they do need to actually match. They need to be valid because we use them to validate that the document that we get back from you matches what you told us to expect.
So that SHA hash is an actual SHA-256 hash of the entire contents of the document. So we use that to match it to documents we may already have in our cache, among other things.
And it's the same thing with the version. So if it's a document that is changing, then without the version information, we may use a cached copy that is old. So both of those, all of that detail helps us understand when we can cache and when we can't cache.
Excellent question. I don't know. Suspenders, and so why would we need both a version and a SHA-256 hash? So I can actually specifically remember cases where version is the thing we wanted to be looking at and not the SHA-256 hash. However, to be honest, I don't specifically remember what they are, only that you need to have both. Oh, absolutely. So just so we're clear, I can make up answers. And they will sound plausible. I don't see any point. I could say anything, and I can make it. I don't remember. All right. So in terms of the actual contents file, there's really just two things you can do here, and you can modify these by adding there's a headers that you can use to override what this does. So get file, I think, is the default, and then you can use a header to change it to put. But that's all documented, and I don't want to worry too much about those details. But fundamentally, these are very simple. Get file is give me the binary content of the document, and put file is the opposite, which is basically I have changed the document and now I want to put it back.
So to answer your question, put file is how you get that content back. The client has decided that it needs to, that the document has been updated, then it will do a put file to the host.
And this is how Excel does it. It is not how Word, OneNote, or PowerPoint do it. And that's, we'll get to that in a sec. I want to talk a little bit about some of the other things that get returned in the response to the WAPI source or the check file info request. And the reason I want to talk about this is just to give you a sort of flavor. This is a tiny, tiny subset of something like 50 different parameters that can be returned. It's a big, huge JSON response that is all thoroughly documented, but hard to use the documentation. So for example, the close URL. So one of the things that the WAPI server can return to the WAPI client is a close URL. And the intention of that is there may be UI inside of us. Like there is a closex right now inside of the Office web apps. There might be other close UI. And when somebody clicks on that UI, the close URL is where we would navigate the page. Right? So the server is able to tell us, hey, please navigate here anytime somebody initiates a close gesture. Download URL is different. Download URL is actually an endpoint that will provide the file to the user. So that is an opportunity for us to provide UI that essentially just hands the file back to Windows or whatever operating system you're using. I put IRM policy description up here because, hey, look, we have IRM. But also because it's, I think, a good example of a case where we actually are passing a string in the check file info response or in the response to the WAPI source request. We're passing that string back in, and that string actually gets displayed in the UI of the Office web app. So there's a yellow bar across the top that says, you may not forward this, or you can't copy, or whatever it is that the IRM policy description says. It can say whatever you want it to say because you can define it. Read-only is a Boolean. It just basically tells the client that, this is a read-only file. It doesn't matter what the user's permissions are. I'm not going to show any editing UI because they won't work. And supports COBOL is essentially the host telling us that they support the ability to use the COBOL protocol. It's not actually called COBOL officially. It's called
MSFS,
some letters. It's called that, MS-FSS, FSS-HTTP. Learn to hate it. It's very complicated. But this tells us that the host supports that, which meant now we know we can light up editing scenarios for Word and PowerPoint and OneNote because they require that protocol. I want to talk about a few other things that you can do and how they work. So off of, well, that's not really a URL. I managed to miss one of those. I love the fact that things that look like URLs get turned into URLs when you're typing up presentations for protocols. That's blue and underlined, and it shouldn't be. I'll fix it up so you don't have to look at that. You can also use the x-wapi override header to execute all these different actions on a file. All of these are essentially, or the bulk of them are essentially around editing scenarios. Put relative file is actually, you use that to make a copy of the file. Lock and unlock are sort of self-explanatory. Refresh lock is part of the same scenario. Unlock and relock, also part of the same scenario. Execute cell storage request and execute cell storage relative request, those are the nasty bits of the protocol that are documented in one line that says go read ms-fsshttp, and I'll talk about that in a second. Delete file is pretty self-explanatory, but the point I'm really trying to make with this slide is there's a whole bunch of additional things that you can do as a WAPI, as a WAPI server if you want to implement these things. You do not need to, though. Remember how simple it was to make Vue? Vue doesn't require any of this. I'm almost out of slides, but then I'm almost out of time, too. Execute cell storage request. I just put this here because I want you to understand what it takes to make an editing host. And what it takes to make an editing host is reading ms-fss-http and implementing it. Implementing WAPI viewing, how long you figure? If you're really, really bad at writing code, maybe a week?
Yeah, about a week if you're really bad.
Yeah, you have to be pretty incompetent to take a week. So it's not hard. And implementing ms-fsshttp, or what we call COBOL.
About a year if you're really good.
Yeah. You just don't want to. Unless you have a $1 million business based on the idea that you need that functionality, at which point, sure, go ahead. I actually just talked to a customer who does have a business that relies on them having that functionality, and they're moving forward, and they're going to actually implement ms-fsshttp and put licensing enforcement in place because the editing licenses still come into play. But it's worth it to them because they've got a $1 million business based on it. And when I say million, I mean multi-million, because $1 million is not enough. All right, these are the things that I think you should read. Probably WAPI blog post is the better thing to read. But when it comes to details, the compliance documentation is the right thing to read. If the compliance documentation leads you astray, please email Tyler. yeah, absolutely. Because you know what they do? They just email.
They email me.
So are there any other questions? Yes. No. So I believe that Word does require it. We have not implemented a simple, so the question is, thank you. The question is, does edit always require ms-fsshttp? And the answer is yes in the case of Word, PowerPoint, and OneNote. No in the case of Excel. Excel doesn't use it right now. So the version of the Office web app server on the market right now does not require it for Excel. So if all you want is to build Excel editing, that's actually pretty easy.
For Excel, you need to handle locking.
You do,
but other than that, you can do editing without COBOL.
But we don't promise not to make it harder in the future. So just by me pausing, you can guess the answer isn't just a straight up no. It's complicated. We are in fact looking at implementations of things like that for an assortment of different reasons. You all probably know that, if you don't know, you'll know in a second. We're doing real-time collab where when you type, everyone sees what you're typing. That actually relies on a local implementation of that protocol. It's not the full protocol though, it's a subset. The question, should I have repeated the question? The question was, are we putting MSF-FSHTTP on our end so that you won't need to create your end of it? And the answer is, we're moving in that direction. We do not have plans right now to go all the way and actually take away the requirement. Will that ever happen? Possibly. I think that is a thing which we get asked for pretty regularly, and unfortunately, that comes right down to business and resources. It's clearly a thing we can do, and it really comes down to figuring out what the right thing to do is, given a very limited set of resources and a very long list of things we want to achieve. Are there any other questions? I'm exactly at 3:30. I think I have a meeting now. Thank you.